Yes, we call this class Pesach without the pain. The reason we call this class Pesach without the pain is because my experiences from my own life and those who I've come into contact with who keep Pesach, it's a very painful holiday. The reason it's a painful holiday is because the vast majority of people who care about Pesach and want to keep the laws of Pesach get their information from some of these Pesach books. And the problem with the Pesach books is that it's when you're writing a book, you write a book and you want to be accepted. I don't blame the authors so much because everybody rails on you if you write something lenient. And who wants that? So it's much easier to err on the side of caution and be stringent, and then you won't get people screaming at you all day long that you're too lenient. And the problem with that is that the people who pay for that are the consumers, are the people who buy the book and learn their information from the book. And I'm in a very unique position in a sense that I don't have to worry about that because, you know, I'm not so high profile that people really, you know, care what I say. So I tell like it is. And there have been people who challenge me, who call me up and write me emails and whatever it is. And I politely explain to them why I say what I say. And I think it's pretty close to 100% of the time they say, okay, I get it, you know? So I guess what I'm saying is that I went through this whole process where I read these books and I drove myself crazy. And then I learned from other teachers of mine who also were able to be honest about what the halakha is and what you have to do, that it's not as simple as it says in the books. And it's usually there are very legitimate ways to do things in an easier, more manageable fashion. And what I did through the years was compile an approach to each one of the aspects of Pesach and to enable individuals. And like I always say, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, the job of a rabbi is to make things easier for people, not more difficult. And that's what I try to do. So in this class, the goal is to go through, you know, in very succinct terms, start sync with the methods, go through every single section of Pesach and explain what we have to do. And if a person wants to do more, it's great. And there's some people who love, I know people who love to do spring cleaning. They love it. And this time of year is a perfect time to do it. Spring. Supposed to clean for Pesach, it's perfect. And they start preparing for Pesach in January. I know people like this, and I give them a lot of respect. I mean, I wish I was clean as that clean. But, you know, they tell me that they're a little OCD, they're doing it because of their own hang-ups. They know they don't have to do it. But some people think I don't know about January, but they think they have to, you know, do all the stuff, you know, scrape the walls. And the Shulchan Aruch actually says, if someone scrapes the walls, you know, don't make fun of them because it says in Shulchan Aruch, it says because they care about Pesach. So I'm not making fun of people like that. I'm just saying the problem is when they say you have to do it, then I make fun of them. Right? But if they say they want to do it, I'm all for it. So the goal of this class is to know what we have to do, what we absolutely have to do, the bottom line. And then if someone wants to add to it, they're more than welcome to do so, you know, on whatever they feel like they want to add to. But there's so many people that I know, wonderful people who care about Jewish law, that they go to the Seder, they're dead, they can't move. You know, the whole purpose of preparing is that you should get out of the Seder, spirituality, what you know, this is the new year, in a sense, renewal for your Jewishness. They call it the rejuvenation, right? That's what Pesach is about, and we can't appreciate that if we go crazy in the preparations. And you can't possibly do all the preparation. It's almost impossible for a human being to do everything that is asked of them in those books. And because of that, people really drive themselves insane mentally and physically. So that's what we're going to try to do, is to try to focus on what we have to do. and get educated in that regard. And that way, we know how to focus on the things that are essential and be able to focus on the essential things when the holiday comes around. So, the first thing is in terms of preparation. There's a mitzvah to get rid of chametz from your possession. Right? And that has to happen by Friday morning, basically. Friday morning, you said this morning was 11:51 a.m.
Sorry, not selling it.
Selling it or getting rid of it from your possession, either or.
You're emailing, you have to email by web.
So, number one, it's very important. It's very important to sell the chametz because people. So I got a call a couple of times this year already. I get school every year. They live in a neighborhood where people say that you're not allowed to sell chametz. Now let's sell your chametz, you have to get rid of your chametz. So I'm like, fine, so that's okay. You can get rid of all your chametz, but you should sell it. You should always sell your chametz. Because you never know what you have in your possession. But if it forgets about something, it doesn't hurt. Right? We don't force people to pay $18. You don't have to pay the $18. Just sell it. I'm just saying, a person can't afford the $18, isn't it?
But some people give
more. We got a check for $100 for something. People are, you know, very generous also.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing out that just sell the chametz. Sell the darn chametz, you know what I mean? So that's number one. That's one way to get rid of chametz in your possession. There's a funny thing I always joke about, which is the Ramban says, that there's a mitzvah called tashbisu. The mitzvah is to get rid of chametz in your possession. So they say that even if you eat it, you get rid of chametz, right? So that means...
That's my method.
So if you have cereal... You eat it up. So if you have cereal and you eat it, so the reason why I point this out is because the briskers, for instance, on Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So they suck candy the whole day because they say, what the heck, it's every second I can get a mitzvah, which is not true. Because the candy is not really eating, right? It's not really eating. And the purpose of the eating is to prepare for the fast. So candy doesn't prepare for the fast either. So, but the idea is cool. Like they're saying, this is a special day, I can eat, so easy, I just eat, and I fulfill a mitzvah. So that's what I'm pointing out with this tashbisu, is that if you eat anyway, so have in mind, you're fulfilling a mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz. So in that case puts you in the spirit of the holiday also. So they say from Rosh Chodesh, which is already passed, so every time we eat chametz, you should have in mind that we're fulfilling this mitzvah of getting rid of chametz.
So,
and the other thing is that we should be starting now to prepare for Bedika. Bedika is checking for chametz, and I'll explain what our obligations are with that. But after the Bedika is over, we do something called Bittul Chametz. Bittul Chametz means we say you nullify the chametz. It's vital that every person says this, adult, child who understands it, because basically what the statement is making is that my association with chametz is being cut off, right? You say it at night, you say it during the day. Really, when this happens is 11:51 on Friday morning. But what you're saying is that I'm personally cutting myself off. So therefore, you can't have, really, ideally, someone else should not be doing that for you. And because your association with chametz is personal. Like, you know, you have this personal relationship with your chametz. So you have to be the one that consciously uncouples from in the spirit of Gwyneth Paltrow, right?
So I had a household can't say Bittul for the whole household.
It's like better not.
Two adults. Okay.
Each adult should say that for themselves because they have their own personal connection to the chametz. So that's another way we get rid of chametz in our possession, is to say Bittul. The fourth way, I forgot where we're up to, is to do what's known as bir chametz. Bir chametz means to get rid of chametz in your possession. And that's the bracha we say before bedika. We don't say mitzvah al mitzvahs bedika. We don't say the mitzvah of checking, because that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is checking was in order to get rid of the chametz. So that means that by the time bedika is over, you should know where all your chametz is. And whatever you don't want to get rid of, and whatever you're going to sell, you should put together in a plastic bag or something, or in a cabinet. If it's in your refrigerator, you could do that and put it in a plastic bag and just label it as chametz so that no one will eat it. And the point is, you know what all your chametz is, you know the chametz being sold, or you get rid of it, one or the other.
So you don't have to throw it out if it's in your fridge. You can still keep it in your fridge as long as it's sealed off and clearly demarcated as chametz, don't eat on Passover, what have you?
Yes, because since you sold all the chametz in your house, that's what I do. I sell all the chametz in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't sell your house. I sell the chametz in your house. So wherever your chametz is, it's sold. Now, who? Rome the hole? Oh, the matzahs, yeah, they're on top. Yeah, so you should label it ideally, because you knowing where the chametz is helps in terms of the sale. Because you sold it, what did you sell? So on one hand, you could say, which is fair, this is why I think everyone should sell, even if you don't have chametz that you put aside. Wherever the chametz is, that even if I know about it, it's sold. That's what you want to do. But there's also a concept that you're selling chametz that you know about, because that's really ideally what you're selling. So putting it in a bag and saying, I know where my chametz is, which means I know what is being sold, is beneficial in terms of making the sale on a higher level, in terms of, you know, organizing your house in such a way that is preparing for Pesach properly. And you can do this in the refrigerator, the freezer, the cabinets.
Now, would a single, like, Ziploc bag be fine for doing that? Or does it have to be, like, double bagged in order to prevent it from, if it touches something that's Pesedic, from making it chametz?
So, one Ziploc bag will not cause it to transfer. But everyone's got to know themselves when it comes to this. It's nothing to do with transferring taste. It has to do with... You have to know yourself what is going to prevent you from eating the chametz, and you better know that. It's like this is serious business. If you have a challah in your refrigerator, and you say, oops, that's a big oops. You know, you don't want that to happen. So put double bag it if you think that's going to stop. If you think a Ziploc bag is not fine, most people, that's not enough, because you keep Ziploc bags in your refrigerator for regular food.
Mm-hmm.
So you should do it a little differently than you do it normally.
Usually do something opaque, right? Good yellow ShopRite bag or aluminum foil. Right. I like to not have to look at it. Like I want to really pretend that it's sold and out.
Okay. That's good.
That's not the answer. That's good. Practical answer, but.
Thank you.
The point is to label it in a way, or to packaging in a way that's different, so that you know, you know that it's not regular food, it's chametz. So that's in terms of storage of the food. And in terms of the bedika, that's done Thursday night. Thursday night. Now, it's better to prepare for the bedika, but on the other hand, you can't do bedika if your whole house definitely has no chametz in it. Because you can't make a bracha on it. You could do bedika, but you can't make bracha on it. You could check for chametz, but the bracha is saying, I'm going to check. Well, it's a joke. You're not checking. You checked already the whole house. So if someone has their whole house, the type of person that prepare meticulously in advance, leave one area of your house unchecked that you do bring chametz in there. And you're not worried it's going to take you too long to figure out if there is chametz there, where the chametz is. So there is some purpose to your bedika, so you can make a bracha. That's ideal way to do it.
I'll explain
what that means. Bedika, not. So
that's preparable to putting out like 10 breadcrumbs.
You should not put out 10 breadcrumbs. Not put it out, because people have reported to me they couldn't find the tenants. It's a disaster.
Don't make it that tricky.
And it doesn't help for the bracha. Because it's a joke. You know where the chametz is. You're putting it in there not because there's chametz there. And the other thing is, people put it in places that they don't ever bring chametz the whole year. It doesn't. You don't have to check. Like your bathroom.
Yeah. No.
If you keep candy bars in your bathroom, which I don't know why, then you should check for chametz. Most people don't. And the OU last year finally came around and said that you don't have shampoos are allowed to be used, and cosmetics are allowed to be used, I've been saying that for years.
I was going to ask you, so is this like a sea change in attitude? Because all these non-food products now, they don't say you have to wear it out. they changed their minds about, you know, all the wrapping, you know, the aluminum foil and the plastic and the cosmetics even, and all this stuff that they used to say needed.
I can't wait till they come around with the kidney out there, which we'll get.
Oh, I was going to ask about
that. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, but basically, my approach to kidney oat, about 90% of what they say is kidney oat is not kidney oat. Mm-hmm. But not, you can't get rid of 100% of it. Mm-hmm. Not kidney. But when it comes to cosmetics, it's very clear in Shulchan Aruch that if you have something that is chametz in it, for sure, and it's not edible, a dog wouldn't eat it as food, then it's fine. So there were some who quoted Rav Moshe Feinstein that he said that if there's, let's say, alcohol in there and an alcoholic is crazy, he would boil it down in a lab and take out the alcohol, and therefore it's called edible. That's what the person said. I happen to know that Rav Moshe Feinstein did not say that. Mm-hmm. And the reason I know that is because my in-laws studied with him the last 7 years of his life, and he like rolled his eyes at that. It sounds insane, right? But it's actually printed in this Pesach book. Whole explanation about alcoholics and how they go to a lab and they take out the alcohol. I mean, I don't understand why
that. Is that easier than going to a liquor store?
They're allowed 4 cups of wine at the theater,
right? Plenty of
pictures. Scriptures. So that whole argument doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make sense, because even if that is true, which is not true, but even if it is true, you don't have to think about crazy people like that when it comes to valuing chametz, whether it's food or not. That's a cool food anyway. It's a cuckoo food, right? So they actually have come around with that now. Because it's really no other argument. I never really saw a normal argument of why cosmetics should be chametz. I mean, if something has oats in it, they could argue, make an argument. Maybe I don't even know what the argument's going to be.
Even then, you're not eating it.
Yeah, just because you can make a halakhic argument about a lot of stuff, but it doesn't really make sense. So even the Chazanish was one of the most stringent halakhic decisors. He allows shampoos, like straight out. So
what about toothpaste?
So toothpaste, the reason why people don't like toothpaste is because you put it in your mouth. But I'm of the opinion is that toothpaste is not food either. No one eats toothpaste. Right? So even if you put it in your mouth, it's still not food. So I don't think you need to get, I mean, it's a good idea to eventually change out your toothbrushes and stuff, but you don't need a new toothbrush for Pesach. You don't need new toothpaste. You need to, like, people think they need new lipstick for Pesach. You don't need new lipstick. You don't need new chapstick. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Every book says that, right? Doesn't the book say that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand it. What's the problem with old chapstick? Is there a loaf of bread hiding in there? There's nothing in there. So this stuff is not food. So the bathroom, I was just saying, is not a place where you bring chametz into there. There's no suspicion that there's chametz in there. So I see what people do is they take 10 pieces and they say, let's put it in the bathroom. Why would you do that? Like, what's the purpose of it? You don't, before you didn't have to check it. Now you're making it into this crazy, you know, storehouse of bread that, there's no reason to be there. So I say, don't put out the 10 pieces. It doesn't help your bracha. And it's just, only there's only downside. There's no upside. That's the bottom line. So I always divide the house into three parts. Part one section is places like the bathroom where you never bring chametz, and there's no reason to think there's chametz in there. You do not have to check those places for chametz. If you want beforehand to make 100% sure, fine. But the night of Bedikah, there's no obligation to check those places. The second is a place in your house that you don't cook in or anything, not the kitchen, it's outside the kitchen, that you do bring chametz. So that depends on you. Like, my house, basically the whole house is like that. Like, because like I watch with Miriam these shows in the den, in the bedroom, there's food everywhere, okay? The whole house is a place that we've been chametz into, so I know that I have to look out for chametz in all these places. But some people are very, very, very clean. And because they're so clean, they will never bring food out of the kitchen. Ever. Right? And I always joke about Twix bars in your sock drawer, right? Most people don't have Twix drawers in their sock drawer. They don't keep food in their sock drawer. So therefore, you don't have to check your sock drawer. But like for me and Miriam, we got to check our around our bed, on our... If there are part, in other words, there's parts to the room that chametz is there, and parts to the room that chametz is not going to be there. So you have to check the parts of the room that the chametz is going to be there. And if, like I said, if someone doesn't bring chametz outside of their kitchen and dining room, that's all they got to check is their kitchen and dining room. So that's section two of the house. Places that you bring chametz, but it's not places you cook. Like, obviously, the kitchen is third section. The place that you actually cook food. Now, why is that different? Because the halacha is that on Pesach, even if one crumb falls into your food, then you're finished, right? The whole food is gone, right? So therefore, kitchen is where you have to worry about crumbs. Outside the kitchen, you don't have to worry about crumbs. Why? Because crumbs... There's two levels of chametz on Pesach that's not permissible to have in your possession. Level one is what's known as a kazayis of chametz, actual chametz. A kazayis means at least the size of a half a slice of bread, in the middle of the slice, let's say. That's biblically not permissible to hold in your possession unless you sell it or you get rid of it, whatever. But you can't have that in your possession. And obviously you can't eat it, right? So that is one level. Second level is rabbinical. The rabbis were not concerned about you eating crumbs, right, that are on the floor of your bedroom. You're just not going to eat that. So I see people who spend hours the night before Pesach cleaning the crumbs from their under their toilet. I don't know what they're doing. In their bedrooms, in their sock drawers, they're cleaning everything. The purses, well, the purses you have to check because the purse is something that you, someplace that believe, that's the ultimate place that you bring chametz into.
But what if that under a cushion? You don't have to put it under a cushion.
Right, same thing.
Stuff there because family members who eat them.
So if
who this, I won't mention.
So if there's a concern
that you have,
so crumbs you don't have to worry about. We already determined you don't have to worry about crumbs. Someone, no one's going to eat the crumbs. But someone might eat the, what we say, we would call gluska yafa, we call like a Cheerio. Right? Now, it's not really common.
Will definitely eat floor Cheerios that are days old. It's
yeah. There's no 5-second rule when it comes to Cheerios. So, if it's edible, if it's a piece of food that's edible, like a Cheerio, I give a Cheerio as an example because that's probably the smallest thing I could think of that someone would say, oh, look, a Cheerio, and eat it off the floor, right? It's a little weird, but people might do it.
A lot of people do it now.
So the rabbis were afraid of that. Now, even though biblically it's not prohibited to eat that, but right, because you need to eat the kazayas, but rabbinically you can't eat anything, right? But they're not worried about crumbs. They're worried about Cheerios and something like that. So therefore, that's the only size food that you have to worry about, which really makes it a lot easier. Because if you, for instance, have a situation with your couch, so you really should get rid of the Cheerios from your couch. You should get your dustbuster and get rid of this. But you don't have to worry about all the billion crumbs. So you don't have to get rid of every single crumb. But in your kitchen, you do. So that's the case. What do you do? So it's worth it to get someone, a cleaning person, to clean the kitchen if you can. It makes it a lot easier. But if you can't afford that, it's fine. Because it's an easy solution. And this is my favorite household item to a degree, just like the Greeks. They love Windex, right? So for Pesach, I just love like Fantastic or Formula 409 or some, whatever that is. Or Windex, because it's poisonous.
Because it's what?
It's poisonous. And the reason why that's good in halacha is because if you spray it on your counter and there's crumbs there, they're going to absorb the poison. So if the crumb then falls into your food, it won't make the food not kosher for Passover. Because a crumb ruins your food, but a crumb that's poisonous will not, because it's not edible.
Right.
Right, you might die eating it, but at least you died not eating chametz. Right? So if you have crumbs potentially on your...
You didn't say without death.
Painless death. No, no one dies from that. But I'm just saying, if you spray your countertops, and if we have time, I'll explain it, go into it. But the bottom line is, if you spray your countertop, you're injecting Formula 4-9 into every inch of your countertop, which will make the insides of your countertop, which what people are afraid of. That's why they tell you put 7 layers of tinfoil on there. I had people literally, I was shocked. When I gave that class on countertops and it got out, people called me and I had one person in person, another person on the phone cried, thanking me that they don't have to spend the money on cardboard and tinfoil. They said, you know how much money that costs?
My grandmother, when they actually ordered custom countertops for her kitchen counters during Passover.
They were wooden boards that covered everything, and right. Then foil over that.
Exactly. So if you go to the store now, they take advantage of people. They will sell you this stuff that normally arts and crafts cost nothing. As Pesach, it's 10 times the price. It costs you $150 just to cover a few countertops, and then you got to do your stove. Forget about that, and your refrigerator and everything, and it goes crazy. So what I explain to people is it makes it a lot simpler if you understand that the Formula 409 does the trick. It does it on your table? It does it on your right? Part of there's a long explanation for this. If you want to listen to the explanation, it's on the website. It's called. You do ccshul.com on Google, and then you write countertops. And you find the class on countertops, the sermon I gave on countertops. But the bottom line is there's many reasons why. One of the reasons, logical reasons, is that after 24 hours, whatever's in the countertop becomes what's known as spoiled. So that itself helps. 4-4-9 makes it even more than that, more than spoiled. It makes it poisonous. Makes it completely obliterated if there's any, right? So people think, when you read these books, you get the impression, I always give the analogy of that commercial for that cleanser, that bathroom cleanser with the little bubbles. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Scrubbing bubbles. So people think that there's chametz scrubbing bubbles lying in your countertop and just waiting with evil to fly out and destroy your matzah brei, you know? So you need to have 17 layers to protect you from the scrubbing bubbles, the chametz scrubbing bubbles that are going to fly out of your countertop. That's the impression you get, right? That's, when I read the books, I'm like, oh my God, there's like, what's in there? The pizza caused all this... These evil scrubbing bubbles to hide in my countertops. So you know how you kill the scrubbing bubbles? With the Formula 409, Windex.
Fantastic.
You spray the countertops, they go, you know, like that'd be a great commercial. Right? Yeah. Basically they all are dying. Because not only are they spoiled, these scrubbing bubbles, but now they are obliterated from the poisonous cleanser. So that's part of the law. There's more logic than that, but that's a simple law. So if you think of it that way, then you have a simple solution to every single surface in your. And that includes your sink, right? Why does it include your sink? Same thing, because the sink and the countertops and the tables, they don't get hot. They get hot. They don't get boiling hot like your stove. Stove is different. It's a different animal. But since they don't get boiling hot, then they basically don't really absorb anything inside of it. So that includes the sink, even though the sink could get very, very hot, but it's very hard, let's put it this way, it's very hard to inject chametz in halacha into your sink in a way that's gonna, you need to kosher it. Like the oatmeal, whatever you're gonna have, the oatmeal, it's all this stuff is very, very hard. It's gotta be really hot. It's gonna be so hot, you stick your finger in it, you can't stick it in for 15 seconds, whatever, 10 seconds. You pull your hand away like that, basically. 5 seconds. It's going to be like 200 degrees. You know, a crazy amount. It almost never happens. So So the sink, the countertops, the tables, and even your stovetop, whatever you could burn out, great. But you don't have to go crazy. Basically, you burn out the grates. You want the grates to put in your oven, or you turn it upside down, you burn it. And how long does that take? A minute. 1 minute. You take the grates, you turn upside down, turn it high for a minute, finished. You clean it first, by the way. You should try not to use it for 24 hours earlier as well. Not necessary, but it's nice to use. Then you clean it with formula 409, whatever, fantastic. And then burn it out. And then you're good to go. You don't have to cover it, you don't do anything. As long as it's clean, it's fantastic. And you burned it out. Right? That's a minute. So we've done Badika 1 minute, and you have your whole, and then you wipe your countertops, your stovetop. Even now, people ask me all the time about glass. What about the glass stovetops? Does anyone have that? Okay, so I don't have to deal with it. But basically, it's a similar approach. Because if you read the books, they tell you, sorry, you cannot use your oven for Pesach. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that's what it says in it. Like, there's no way to kosher it. Because Rav Heinemann tried 16 different ways to kosher it. They all broke the stove. He broke 16 stoves. Testing out. But I can't understand how you could tell people they can't use a stove. I know people who have two kitchens, one for Pesach, one for the year. They have six ovens, three for during the year, two for Pesach, because one, now they're telling people they need fish ovens, which is incredible. Anyway, the point is that you don't have to go that far when it comes to these, almost everything is kosherable, you just have to do it in the right way. The oven is very easy, just turn it to the highest temperature. And remember, you're doing this when you're not going to put chametz in it anymore. You don't have to do this during Badika. But this is the way you prepare your. You could do this a week in advance. You could do this Friday morning. But you should do it in preparation of Pesach. So dishwasher is one of those things that it depends how much you need it. If a person really needs a dishwasher, so then I say there's a way to kosher. If you don't need it, it's better not. And the reason I say better not is because it's made out of plastic. So plastic is an iffy material. One way to look at it is that it's like a regular utensil like metal. Another way to look at it is not. It's like what's known as a klicheres, which is a pottery. The problem with pottery is that when it absorbs a non-kosher food, it's like food. Like when you drop a milk onto a steak, you don't say, okay, let me clean out the steak. I mean, it's finished. It's in all the pores, all the little crevices of the steak. No way getting that out. So the rabbi said the same thing with the klicheres of pottery, because pottery is very porous. So once you have non-kosher going into it, there's nothing you can do. They say you got to break it, and you can't even use it anymore. So some say plastic is like pottery. Some say stoneware is like pottery. Some say all these countertop materials, granite. I don't know what they have. What else is there? Whatever.
Marble.
All these different materials are like pottery. But the truth is that it's not, everyone's not in agreement here. Since everyone's not in agreement, so you have to look at it differently than pottery. You can't just say it's pottery. So someone asked me today, they have a urn, hot water urn, and they want to know if they could use it, and you know, they use it for oatmeal. So at the end of the story, it was a long conversation, but the end of the story was that you can, until she can use it, but they have to, they should just fantastic it down, and if they could pour hot water on it, it's fine. Run hot water through it, like, which is what they do with it anyway. That's what it's made for, and that's it. And
even with the plastic,
even though it's plastic, because it's not pottery, so there's ways around. So say in the dishwasher. Dishwasher is usually made out of plastic. Or, you know, sometimes made out of metal, but then the racks are usually made of plastic also. So if everything's metal, then I would say it's easier to kosher it. But if a person needs a dishwasher, then it's very simple to kosher plastic the same way you would do metal. Because some say that plastic is like metal. And if you don't hold plastic like metal, it holds like pottery. then you can't do it. But the thing is that since it's a suffix, since it's a doubt whether it's like pottery or not, we say that we could rely on the fact, for instance, that soap. The soap, it's hard to say, since you almost run every single cycle with soap, that anything normal got absorbed into your dishwasher. I mean, it smells horrible, you know? It smells like soap. And even if you put pork in there, it's not like an oven, really. If you're honest about it, it's not like your everyday utensil. So that's one of many reasons why a dishwasher you don't treat like everything else, even if it's made of, even if you say it's perhaps it's pottery. So I always tell people, if it's important to have it, then you run three cycles of soap that way with soap. That way you sure got every inch of the place, every inch of the dishwasher soaped, and before you do that, you inspect for food or anything. Particles, because a lot of times food gets into the drain, it's better to get rid of that. And then you could use your Pesach, because there's really nothing that at that point that you're worried about coming out of scrubbing bubbles, so to speak, coming out of the dishwasher into your food or into your dishes. So that's what I push to dishwashers. And then microwaves, I don't think it helps to do the glass of water thing that people do, because we could use microwaves for so many other things for like 10 minutes. You know, a glass of water just is not going to get that out. So what will get it out is fantastic. So if you take fantastic and you scrub your entire microwave with it, you wait 24 hours, and then you cover the only thing in your microwave that really is a problem. The reason fantastic works, by the way, is because in a microwave, even though it's hot, is because like it's different than a counter. Because if you analyze the microwave after you use it, you'll find that nothing is hot. Nothing gets hot except the plate on the bottom that's boiling hot. Even after 30 seconds, it's boiling hot. So that, to me, is the only issue, is the plate on the bottom. So a very simple solution is just wrap it with two layers of saran wrap. And the Shach says that if there's two layers of anything, even the thinnest material that separates between, let's say, kosher food and non-kosher food. So for example, in an airline food, if you notice, when you order a kosher meal, there's two very thin layers of tin foil that separates between the packaging and the food. Now, they didn't do that because randomly they decided to use tinfoil. They did it because of halacha. It's two layers of tinfoil means food can't penetrate two layers, right? I mean, between us, can't penetrate one layer either. But, and that's the argument I had with Mashkiach, who's telling me how it's necessary to have hashkacha on canned vegetables. I said, why? He said, because they cook it together with cat food. I'm like, they cook it together with cat food? That's ridiculous. I never tasted cat food in my green beans. Didn't mean that. He meant that there's one facility of all the facilities in America, that one, they, which I found that is not true, that they make cat food on the same premises as they do green beans. So it happens to be an urban legend, but that's what he said. So I said, fine. So what's the problem? He says, well, they take the cans of tuna fish and they cook it together with the green beans.
Meaning like once it's already processed and sealed.
So he didn't tell me that at the beginning, but I'm like, it made it sound like they're like open cans of cat food and green beans like right next to each other. But then he comes out that exactly what you said, that they first seal it. And when they cook it, because they know to cook it in the can, well, it's sealed in the cans, they cook it in the same, first you made it sound like they cook it at the same time as the cat food. I said, they would never do that. Okay, right, what they do is they cook it in a vat, all the cat food, or all the green beans. Then they vacuum out the water, they clean the vat, and then they put in more water and put in the green beans, right? So then, if that's the situation, then he's saying what happens is the cat food goes through the can, into the walls, stays in the walls like scrubbing bubbles, waits for the green beans, comes out of into the water through the can. So you need hashkacha on the can, on the green beans. I'm looking at her. You
believe? I'm animus on the part.
You believe
of
what you're saying? So anyway, so there's reason why that doesn't apply over here. Hey guys, how
sorry
are you?
Sorry for like.
No problem. Happy to have you. Well, that's how he has a job. I feel bad. I mean, people have a job, but that's why he has a job, because. So the point is that you need two layers. So therefore, when you have a plate at the bottom of a microwave, it gets very hot. So to kasha microwave, you don't have to do the steam thing. Take fantastic, clean the whole thing well, take saran wrap and double wrap the bottom of the plate, and then it's kosher for Pesach.
Now, wouldn't the saran wrap melt, though, in the microwave?
That's not my experience, but no. If it does...
All right.
Yeah, it's not my experience.
Okay.
I think it's made to withstand heat like that.
Well, if you
put cheese on it, it'll melt. The cheese will melt.
No, if you put hot cheese on it, then sometimes it melts.
Okay, so keep an eye on it.
You don't put things directly on the
plate.
Right. Usually put a plate on top, and that's what you should be concerned about. Sometimes food gets around, so you just keep an eye on it. But that's my recommendation for to use the microwave. And then, like I said, with the oven, just put it on self-clean. So basically, that's the kitchen. So if you think about it, you clean your refrigerator, separate the chametz from the chametz, label the chametz, and put it in a bag. Freezer and fridge, and also your cabinets.
Are you going to talk about pots?
Pots? Yeah, do you have any koshering pots?
Yeah, so let's say you have cast iron and you use it for various things to pots. So, what do you have to do?
So, I'll speak about koshering in 1 minute because it's a little bit off topic, but I'll do it right after this topic. So, This is bedikah. This is checking for chametz and preparing your kitchen. No, it's okay. No, it's a good, very important topic. But if you think about preparing your kitchen, that's the longest part. But if you add up everything, all the things you have to do for bedikah, it probably shouldn't take you more than an hour, unless you have like a massive house where you bring chametz in the whole house. So even if you don't prepare. In advance. If you do prayer in advance, then it could take you 15 minutes. But that's the kitchen. So again, like I said, there's three parts. One is you don't have to check at all. Second is you just have to look for edible chametz. And third is the kitchen. Any questions on what I spoke of?
So you only have to go pouring boiling water over countertops.
Exactly.
Or taking a blowtorch to...
That's what I'm trying to... one example of things that are in the books.
Mm-hmm.
I think are way overkill, and there are serious ramifications. So when you do bedikah, for instance, you should do it with the candle, because that's the way the rabbi said to do it, but for 30 seconds. Start with the candle, and the rest of it should be light. And the reason is simple, because back then they had no light. The only thing they had was a candle. But today we have lights. Why would you use a candle when you have lights? Candles don't help you. People are going rummaging through their closet with a candle. You're just asking for a fire to happen. It's very scary. I know situations where they have, you know, fires in people's houses because of beer chametz, because of people get seriously injured from that. So there for 30 seconds, you do what Chazal say, put out the fire, use a flashlight if you need to, and use regular lights in the house. It's much better to see where the chametz is. Once the bedik is over, then you do beer. Beer means this, you just open a sitter, but you have to understand what you're saying. If you don't understand the Aramaic, you should read it in English. Basically, what you're saying is that, bittul. So you're saying that it's nullified. There's two reasons for bittul. One reason is that you're actually, in halacha, taking it out monetarily. It's like you went to the street and said, this is anybody can take my bread. That's one level. And the other one is saying that my association with it is like, I look at it as if it's dust of the earth. So if you look in the translation, it says the chametz to me is nullified, which means I am giving up my monetary rights over it, and it's like the dust of the earth. Now that's chametz. At night you say about chametz you don't know about, and they say chametz about you do know about, you don't know about. The chametz you do know about, you're supposed to put aside, either sell it, put aside to sell, or put aside something to burn. If you don't have anything to burn, it's okay. And that's another thing. I don't recommend burning the chametz. You should flush it down the toilet, put it in a public garbage. Those are two better, much better options than burning. Because burning causes, again, fire hazard, and it's a very small benefit in halacha to do that, and the downside is much greater. So that's in terms of beer chametz, getting rid of the chametz the next day. Now, Julia's issue with Haggalah, of preparing utensils for Pesach. So it's not hard to do this. A lot of people buy a lot of stuff for Pesach, which is fine, but it's not necessary to do that because it's really relatively easy. As long as you deal with metal, for sure, it's very easy. If you have a metal pot and you cast iron pot, say you want to use it for Pesach, so and use it for chametz. So basically, there's a rule in halacha, and this is the rule that applies to all different utensils. It says basically, bol chach poto, the way you use it, and the chametz went in, the way it goes out. So if you have a cast iron pot, usually use that with soups or sautéing, right? It's like a frying pan, or it's like a soup, mm-hmm. Like a soup pot. So there are basically, let's say, two levels of kashering on the highest plane. One is called libun, which is burning out. The other is called hagala, which is boiling. Libun is higher. Then leaving is with like the blowtorch thing, and Haggalah is the boiling stuff out. So if you use the pot for frying, that's like an iffy category. Which one is it? Is it boiling, or is it like frying? Not frying, roasting, which is on the fire itself, which is a higher level. So it's better to therefore roast it out. And the way you do that is very simple. You just turn it upside down. You can put it actually in your oven. That's called libun kal, which is acceptable in this case, which is a lower level of, the fire's not directly touching the utensil, but you can do that in this case since it's not clearly, you didn't use it in that fashion anyway. Or you could just use it directly on the fire, taking the cast iron pot, turning it upside down on the fire for a few seconds. And then that way the whole inside of the pot gets very hot. A few seconds, 5-10 seconds, whatever is safe. But this way the fire comes in direct contact with the surface of where you touch the food, and that's much better on halacha. You don't want to put, if you're going to burn it in your house, don't do it in your house. It's very acceptable to do it the other way because that's where you normally cook it.
Does that apply to if you have an electric stove versus a gas stove?
Well, you mean turning it over?
Yeah.
So you treat the electric, it's not exactly the same, you treat the electric like it's a flame.
Okay.
You treat it like a gas in a sense because it does come into direct contact. That's mm-hmm. how you kosher. Frying pans. Now, the only thing about frying pans is that a lot of them are Teflon and stuff like that. That's questionable whether you can kosher it because some say Teflon material turns the frying pan into, even though it's made out of metal, into a pottery because Teflon is a type of material that is questionable, whether it's like absorbent or not, and not whether it can be taken out. So my feeling is that it's really, you can take it out, but if you could get a new frying pan, which doesn't cost that much money for Pesach, it's better. So if you can't, it's too expensive, or for some reason you can't, then you can kosher it in the right way, which is taking the frying pan, turning it upside down, and turning it the other way for a few seconds. And we waited 24 hours since the last time we used it for chametz, and then voila, you can now use that for Pesach. It's amazing. It's not that hard to do. Now it's Pesach. Similarly, you could use all your utensils that are metal. So take all, that's what I do. I take all my forks, spoons, knives, I take a pot that I want to use for Pesach. I boil water in it, and it's boiled. I try to have it boil over a little bit so that it touches the sides as well. But fantastic comes into play over here as well. You could fantastic the pot down. And that does makes it into a better situation in terms of being koshered. And then what you could do then is you take all the utensils, you wait 24 hours since you used them last, put them in boiling water at the same time, mix them around so that you know for sure that the water touched all the utensils in every area. Voila. You now have an entire... You only have to do it for 15 seconds, but there's no way you're going to get it out. So it's going to end up being there until you pour the water out. Right? So, but it only has to be for 15 seconds while it's boiling or steam is coming out of it. And now you have, in 5 minutes, you basically have a pot, a frying pan, and all your forks, spoons, and knives ready for Pesach.
That whole idea of you have to take something that's burning, like, I don't know what, a screw or something, and drop it in, and it's red hot, that I always found dangerous. But
yes, very dangerous.
And
it's over
and
the
it's
top.
Not necessary.
Not necessary to do that. The reason they tell you to do that is because there is an opinion that says that the water has to continually boil as it goes over the pot, for instance. It's not enough that it's hot when it goes over, it has to be boiling. And you can't get it to boil unless you put the brick in or the
hot wood that's been like on top, red hot. Now the question is, okay, once you boil, let's say, all the silverware, can you let the water cool on it and it's still okay?
Yeah, 100%.
And you don't have to throw it out and then throw cold water on it?
You mean in terms of halakha? Halakha, you do not have to do that. No. Because if you wait 24 hours, then there's nothing, the water's fine. If there's nothing, the water has spoiled, and halakha spoiled.
24 hours comments. Of it staying in the water?
No, 24 hours of non-use fire.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So it's really very simple to kosher your kitchen in that regard.
Now, what about silverware that's metal but has plastic handles?
Right, so I think that you could, if you easily get something else, there's really no monetary loss, and it might be better because those handles do get hot occasionally. But since they're not really essentially made to cook with, and you could argue plastic is like, there's one side of the argument that's plastic like metal. So if necessary, that's what I do. Like for instance, this is not exactly the same thing, but like, you know, peelers. Peelers have a metal part when you, the peeler and everything else is plastic. That's not a really perfect example because you don't really need to, but that kind of thing, like a ladle or whatever it might be, you could just kosher the whole thing, including the plastic. And that's a legitimate way to just say, I'm treating it like it's metal. And you could definitely do that. The reason why that's a good argument is because you don't really use the candle to for the food. So it could be that it got hot, and it could be it got hot from chametz, but it's very, there's a lot of reasons to say that you don't have to worry about something like that because it's not used directly for cooking. So I would say if there's any reason why it benefits you, then you just do the same exact thing. You throw it into the pot when it's boiling at the same time, mix it around, and you have, voila, ready for Pesach. It would be advantageous if you do the fantastic thing to the plastic you wanted to. You don't have to.
Now,
apparently. Yeah.
Now, all plastic cooking utensils, I guess, though, are...
So the same type of thing. It's better not to.
Mm-hmm.
If you're stuck and you really need it, then I think you could fantastic it, boil it, and make it kosher pesach. Right. But since you come in direct contact with food, and since it's not that expensive, I'd say only you should do that in an emergency.
Okay.
So glass, it depends what it is. I would say, first of all, I'd say don't do that because the glass is going to break. So that's not going to necessarily help you in terms of kosher. You don't have to break something to kosher. Depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about cups, which you generally do not use very hot, even if you use it for tea, but it's usually a third vessel, second vessel, and those things are not don't necessarily absorb chametz. Top of it, you don't use it for chametz, right? Most people don't eat oatmeal in their glasses, you know. So what do they have in there? They have soda, they have water, they have, you know. I can't even think of it. Beer. Let's say beer. Maybe some people drink beer in there. But most things you have in there is not chametz, and it's not hot. And even if it is hot, it's not hot enough. So these type of things we could basically safely assume that it's probably not chametz in terms of absorption. And so glass is one of those things. There's three different kinds of glass. One is that it's like pottery. One is like metal, and one is it's its own category of something that doesn't absorb anything. Just like the magic utensil for kosher, right? Because it can't become trade. If you put boiling pork on glass, it will make it not kosher. So a lot of people just treat glass that way. Sfarim, a lot of them treat that way because the Shulchan Aruch seems to hold that way. And Ashkenazim, unfortunately, the Ramah is very strict about it. He says you treat it like pottery. So the custom has been that you treat it like a combination of all three. I've seen. Because each one of them has its logic. Each one of them has its holes. So it depends on the scenario. But if you have just drinking glasses, I think that it's good enough just to wash it out and then use it on Pesach. And you don't have to do anything. You don't have to dump it into hot water if you think it's going to survive hot water. Is there an advantage to do it with hot water? I say yes, but I also think that it's going to break. Glass breaks on if it's boiled in that level a lot of times. So if, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know for sure if that's true, but I've seen.
Not very good quality. That's good point. Then it works. You can put it in boiling water, it's fine. Glass.
Like a crystal.
It'll
just.
It can break.
So, if you have that kind of fear, then I don't think you need to do anything more than just wash it. You know, because it didn't absorb chametz. Unless you have a reason to think that you use this for hot chametz. You know?
Oatmeal in the glass.
Oatmeal in the glass. People don't do that. And on Pesach, you're only using it for cold.
But I do. You could take it in your
cup. That's okay. Unless you have matzo balls in there. Yeah, so then, if you really do that, so then there's a reason, there's a little bit. So then there's a reason to be concerned that the glass became chametz. And ideally, in that situation, there's a reason why that still might be okay. Because there's a halacha that says that even if you have a utensil that's used for chametz, but it's not normally used for hot chametz, right? Even if it's 50% of the time, like 50% of the time you use it for non-hot chametz. And then the other 49%, so there's an opinion that says that. We don't paskin like that opinion, but the Shulchan Aruch brings it as a yesh olam, as one opinion to take into consideration. So that is a part of the argument to say that there's glass can be used. But I think that ideally you should, in that situation, if you know you use it for hot chametz, you should boil it. And I think you could use it. But if it's going to break,
okay.
Right, if it's going to break, then it might be a...
I used to get behind it, put it, you know, emptying water up 3 days in a row, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what people do. They call it, what's the term?
3 days.
They fill it up with water, and then...
Empty it.
Empty it, and then you do fill it up with water again, and you do it 3 days in a row.
What about cast?
Enamel coat
of cast iron. I'm a big cast iron. Enamel coat, you know, like this French. I can't pronounce it, but
they,
yeah, enamel coat is really nice
casserole.
They're made of cast iron and they have enamel, like bright red.
So the outer.
Lacquer?
Lacquer?
Lacquer.
No, no, no.
The outer layer is enamel. And you put that right in the oven.
Yeah, or on the stovetop.
Right, so.
It seems like.
Pick a part of it.
Right, so I would say that you could kasha that, but if you could replace it for Pesach, it's better, because there's a few things that are not ideal in that scenario. So if it's really going to bother you, then you could kasha it, really going to make a big difference to you, but because there's a lot of argument to be made that it's kasherable, but it's probably better to not use that on Pesach.
If you're not planning on putting anything in it that would be hummus, and you never did put anything in it that would be hummus, it's not what you use it to cook for, then what's the problem?
It's a little different. The difference is that by the cup, the other advantage is that you don't cook with it. And this, you cook with it. Yeah. And the reason why that's a problem is because there's a lot of things that are chametz that you don't think about, unless you're 100% sure. But the other thing is that chametz is all over your kitchen, right? So it's possible that a small piece of chametz went in there. It's less than 1/60th, and you just don't know. But you're right. That's true. That's the strong argument to be made. If you know for sure you never use a chametz, like an enamel, I would use that as part of the decision making process in the enamel pot. Let's say you have an enamel pot and you know for sure you never use it for hummus.
The popcorn is
not. No, popcorn is not. All right. So if that's what you use it for.
I mean, no, that's not all. That's the only thing I could imagine that would be considered.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Totally not. Consider it maybe kidney oil. I don't think it's kidney oil either. But
that's what I meant.
That's not called chametz. No. Oh, I'm talking about chametz 5 grains.
That's okay. Well, you're saying an argument can be made, but it's not the best thing to do.
No, if you really did, that's a very strong argument. That's a very strong point. If you never used it for chametz and you're obviously not planning on using it for chametz, that's a strong argument to be made. All right, so let's go on a little bit. So one thing that people ask me a lot about, and I write down some of these things because based on the questions I get, is what about open food? Let's say something's kosher for Pesach when it's open. So what I explain to people is that if you have any suspicion that chametz is in there, then you shouldn't use it. But if you have no reason, let's say you have spices. So I used to be able to buy spices every year. I never used the garlic up. Or the onion powder, or the paprika, and I have like 16 cans of every year. You buy another one. It's not necessary to do that unless there's a reason why you think that it came into contact with hot chametz, which is possible, or there's chametz in there. Then you could use that for Pesach. You don't have to buy new stuff, which will save you a lot of money. Coffee makers, that is your category. Of something that has never been used for chametz,
right.
So that's okay to use on Pesach.
Blender.
So
there's a plastic part on top. So what about that part that's never been used for
chametz
either?
Of an urn.
Let's say not a coffee urn, but let's say you're talking about the coffee pot that has a filter. That doesn't work. We're not talking about that.
I don't see why. What's the reason it's not okay?
Only
because
I had the impression that anything that had to do with plastic that you had used for the regular part of the year, you could not use for
pizza. Well, that's not true, unless you have a reason to think that you used it for hot
pumpkin. Uh-huh. Okay.
Coffee makers, there's no reason, unless you think there's a reason why, some people put their challah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've seen that, people want to warm the challah up on Shabbos, they put it on top of like urns and, So that's maybe a little different, but most of the time, there's no reason to think that you did that. And if you really don't think there's any suspicion that you use for chametz, then it's special pesa. You can use that even if it's plastic. Right? I think of a reason why it's not allowed.
There's only one. There's only one other question, and maybe off the top of topic, but what if you're living free and you your do you follow the same proportions?
Yeah, the
tip
stack.
Oat
matzah?
Yeah. So where do you get your proportions from?
I that's what I'm saying. Proportions that you normally have for regular matzah.
Because shiur of matzah that fulfill the mitzvah.
So I think that it's more dense. If I'm not mistaken. We should find that out. How many grams it is. So that means you would need less. But I always tell people that the shiur for matzah at most is a half a sheet of machine matzah. At most, you really could do a quarter. Okay. A quarter of machine matzah is the amount that you have to eat for the mitzvah of eating matzah on Pesach, right? So you make a bracha that the alakas matzah, make a bracha that there's a mitzvah to eat matzah on Pesach Friday night, Saturday night. So basically, it's a quarter of a matzah each time. So you have the most matzah, you have the korev, which is a sandwich, and then you have afikoman. Those three times, a quarter of a matzah. If you can eat a half matzah, better. But a quarter of a matzah is enough.
Quarter of matzah each time.
Each time.
Or a half a matzah each time.
Or a half matzah if you could.
Thanks.
But
if you look at the sheets they give you, it's like.
What about shmura matzah?
So you just do the equivalent. The equivalent
a
of
half, a quarter, whatever?
Yeah. It's pretty easy to compare the two together.
What if your grape juice or wine really bothers your stomach? How much water can you add to the cup?
So 50% wine. If it's 50% grape juice and 49% water, that's enough.
That's 3 ounces.
That's 3 wine.
No,
grape juice.
Right. But no, you only need 3 ounces.
You only need 3.3 ounces.
So you're talking about 1.5?
1.5 each, basically. 1.5 ounces of grape juice. 1.7 ounces of grape juice, 4.6.
Restate it.
Okay.
Make sense? It's funny because the Gemara speaks of that a lot of people have reactions to wine and grape juice. So and that's spices.
Okay, can I ask a really simple question?
Sure.
Let's say you're using your spices all year round, and you're always spicing the food while steam from the chametz is like infusing itself into the spices.
So it depends on the situation. If you really know for sure that no different type of food,
just the steam.
Usually, it's not a problem. The reason why is steam. Case of steam in the Shulchan Aruch, for instance, it has to be yatsulas, it has to be hot.
Super hot.
So the steam in the case in the oven, this milk steam going up to meat on top. So there, it's boiling hot steam. But here, the steam is not boiling hot. You can stick your finger in the steam for an hour. It's not boiling hot. I don't say no effect on spices. There are some opinions that would say that it does. But there's a combination of factors. So I'll say that if there's any suspicion that it can't cut the food itself, so then maybe that's a reason not to use. But otherwise, generally speaking, unless like you get it really close or whatever, you know, stuff like that, but most people don't do that. So I don't.
What happens?
If it does happen to you, so then you should buy new spices for Pesach, but only the spices that you use for that purpose. So that's what I would say. But usually the steam is not a problem for them in the high level. There's other reasons also. Okay, now, so the one thing that we have to get into, which is really important for this year, for Center City people, is buying food without Heksha.
Right?
Buying food without a certification. Without certification. So the bottom line is that if you read every ingredient very carefully and you know for sure that it's not 5 grains in the ingredients, there's nothing 5 grains in the ingredients, and rice and beans are less than 50% of the product, then generally speaking, you could buy that on Pesach. Now, if you live in Muncie or Borough Park, then there's no reason to do that. But here, it's really hard for people. I'm already getting calls from people like, what do I do? People want to buy smoked fish. They want, you know, stuff like that. You can go, now, if you want to buy fish, for instance, anything live that's not produced and packaged, I would try to buy before Pesach, right? People ask me, can I go to a coffee house on Pesach? So, technically speaking, it's not like the end of the world, but it's better not to do that because of the one crumb rule. You can't control the one crumb in a coffee house. It's impossible. So that's not a voice. So if you buy anything live, I'm not talking about eggs. I'm talking about stuff that could come through direct contact with chametz, like a fish counter.
Like a puppy.
What?
Live animal you buy before.
Not live animal. Milk you don't have to worry about. Eggs you do not have to worry about. I'm talking about stuff that's...
Nuts that are like open sack.
So you have to assess. That's one of the things you have to assess. Look and see.
If you buy it before
Pesach,
would be okay?
So it's not the same because they don't really get mixed. So I don't think it matters. I don't think chametz gets in there anyway. So that's not one of the things I worry about. I think you can buy that on Pesach. I'm talking about like you have stuff that is behind the counter that's open and absorb chametz or get crumb chametz on it. Nuts usually don't have that issue. But any food that you go into store, like this opens up a lot of stuff. I mean, if you go to Old Nelson, there's a lot of stuff you can buy in Old Nelson and Pesach. I mean, it's not a Pesach store. You can buy yogurts, you can buy ice cream, you can buy candy. There's a lot of things in there. Right? Like licorice is, you can stay away from. Licorice is made of wheat. It's made out of wheat. People aren't aware of that. You have to read every ingredient very carefully. If you don't know ingredients, take a picture of it and send me an email. I'll tell you whether it's kosher or Pesach. But if, like I said, if you live in a place where it's easy to get kosher Pesach food, then there's no reason to do this. Or there might be a reason to do this, but generally speaking, you could easily not do this. But this is totally legitimate. And very quickly, the reason is for many levels. You know, people ask me in general why I could buy stuff without hechsher. So first of all, there's the FDA rule. The FDA doesn't do the best job of policing, but there's a level of policing, and if you get caught, you can basically get into trouble. Now, it's not that strong. It's not like a hashgacha necessarily, but hashgacha also is not that strong. I mean, my brother-in-law is mashgiach on a soda plant. He goes in once every 6 months. How much hashgacha is that? Because he knows nothing's going to happen. And the reason he knows nothing's going to happen is because there's laws in this country, right? So does that mean that no one breaks the law? No, people break the law. But that's a level of halachic... What?
I'm left
with
this.
What?
People add the word ish to things.
It's like halachish.
Yeah.
It's kosherish.
Yeah.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein said you can rely on the FDA, even though someone says the fine is $25. Who cares? It doesn't matter. But another strong reason is because
people hear about it.
It's the police is much better. The people, the consumer is much. So there are vegan websites, for instance, that say you can't buy Kedem wine because they filter it with a net that's made out of, has a fish ingredient. Can you believe it? That's how far they go. The wine is filtered with a net that has an ingredient in it that has fish. It's not called vegan anymore. So if there's any company that's going to cheat on the vegan side, there's a population police that, generally speaking, is going to be on top of them. And they are aware of it, and they don't want to lose business. So you could rely, in halacha, the ingredients that are on the panel are being reported properly. It's very hard to just get around that.
Now, since you brought up wine, what's the difference between normal mevushal kosher wine and mevushal kosher for Passover wine?
No difference. Generally speaking, there's absolutely no difference. That's sad, but it's true.
So with wine that's normally, that's acceptable, kosher and mevushal for the rest of the year, would that still be acceptable for? Yeah. Okay.
Coffee's the same thing. Coffee, they tell me you can't use coffee. You can't buy Via Coffee. I call the KSA. You can't use Via Coffee. Why? So someone actually called them and they said they can't do it. So they say, Rabbi, I need you to save me. I need my Via Coffee. Can't have Starbucks. But I can't go to Starbucks. I got to get my Via Coffee. So I call them up. I said, what's the problem? Right? I'm like, the principal. Like, what's the problem? So they're like, well, they use a filter. They put in a product, I forgot what it's called, that gets completely absorbed in the coffee making process. That product is made out of corn. So the corn that goes in there, that gets completely absorbed. So I said, is there any taste of corn in the coffee afterwards? No. Is there any of this product left in the coffee? No. But still, you can't use it for Pesach. I said, thank you very much. I called the person back. It's 100% kosher for Pesach. Better not to buy live coffee, just like live fish, on Pesach.
But it's been roasted, I did before Pesach.
When did you buy the coffee?
Last week, 4 days ago.
So that's fine. You mean it's roasted coffee beans?
It's roasted coffee beans, but then I have been grinded.
That's fine. Okay. So Pesach, unless there's a reason you think
it's
not.
It's not, they sell.
Yeah, but do you think the cake got into your coffee?
No, I watched it.
There's no reason to think that. And even if that's a case where even though it's solid, it's nullified. So that's kosher Pesach, because what's the issue? So that's what I'm saying. There's no worry that the ingredients are not accurate. There's no worry that someone put a loaf of bread into your ice cream, unless it says cookies and cream or whatever.
Cocoa. It's cocoa.
Right, pure cocoa, no problem. There's a million things like that. So basically, if you read the ingredients very carefully, you can be sure that those are there. The fact that the comments is not nullified in 60 is only on Pesach. And anything you buy packaged,
the fact that it's not what?
It's not nullified at all on Pesach. A drop falls in,
Okay.
It's all not nullified. That's only on Pesach. But if it's before Pesach, it's nullified in 60 like anything else. And therefore, we basically say that anything that was nullified before Pesach, any product that you buy on Pesach is almost 100% made before Pesach. And even if you're not sure, it's still okay. Because it's a rabbinical restriction, and if you're not sure, it's permissible after the fact. So therefore, any food item that you buy on Pesach, you don't have to worry about the ingredients. No, there's more ingredients that you're not aware of. You don't have to be worried about the fact that there's breadcrumbs flying through the factory and fell into your food, because it's never going to be enough for it to be worthwhile. Because if it was, then they would have to say, maybe there's wheat in here, and anyone with a wheat allergy is going to die, has to know about it. They don't, right? And even if they said that, it's not an ingredient list. I mean, it's less than 1% anyway. So basically, if you read the ingredients carefully, it doesn't have 5 grains in it, then you can use it on Pesach. It's amazing how many things you'll find in the supermarket that fall under this category. It makes shopping a billion times easier. Right now, some people don't feel comfortable because they have guests over, they're gonna freak out and stuff like that. So you should take that into consideration. I have friends of mine who ask me their shilohs. They don't live in Center City, but they ask me their shilohs, and then they have a cabinet. They call it the Rabbi Hirsch cabinet. So they keep all the food that they know is allowed to eat, but they don't want their friends to see them eating. It's like in Borough Park, they have the television console, whatever they have. Mm-hmm. They hide it in the break front, right? They actually have on YouTube they have a television that's under the couch, and you press a button, it flies up under the couch, and it comes out, and that way no one knows you have a television until you press that button. They don't want people to know. Anyway, so that's in terms of buying products. And if you have, like I say, if you have a question, you could ask me. But that's the general principle. Oh, kidney oat. It's not ideal. The reason is because there's a difference of opinion as to whether oats are really the five grains. The Herschel Schechter doesn't make mazonos on oats. That's how far it goes. He makes a dome on oats because this is not one of the five grains. That's not actually real sure. So that's an issue. I mean, if it's not one of the five grains, you're not filling in this for matzah. So if you have no choice, then for sure you should eat it because most posts can hold that it is. But if you could avoid it somehow,
yeah, I mean, if people who are gluten free, oat matzah is acceptable.
Exactly. So if you're gluten free and you have no choice, then it is acceptable because most posts can hold that oats are shilah shul. But someone asked me today, can they have soft matzah? They said it's kosher for Pesach, but I wouldn't eat it to Seder.
Yemenite
soft matzah.
We had Yemenite guests who brought Yemenite matzah,
It was so what?
No, it wasn't.
It was the very interesting thing is the Sfarim hold that if it's brittle like we are, during the year they make mizonos on matzah. They don't make hamotzi on matzah. It's a cracker, not bread. On Pesach they call it bread. So that's why they're
actually, it was so drunk it felt like pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like,
Soft matzah, the Sfarim.
Yeah.
So they asked me, can they eat soft matzah the Seder? And I said, I think it's better not, because with Shlomo Zalman Aruch, for instance, says you shouldn't eat it. So I'm like, it doesn't mean it's chametz, but if you put the mitzvah matzah, it's better to use matzah that's more secure about fulfilling the mitzvah. So I would say the same thing about oats. If you really need to, you should do it. But if you can get away with it, then it's better to use another kind of matzah just for the mitzvah. But, you know, like I said, it just depends on the situation. So the kidney oat is the last thing we'll do. And then if any of those questions, we'll continue, but then we'll end the class. So kidney oat... I've seen this year, I got very upset. I actually had a meeting with somebody. Like, these things get me upset, which I shouldn't. But as a rabbi, it bothers me. So the conservative think tank came out with a tshuva saying, a responsa saying that kidney oat is permissible. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You can eat beans and rice. Okay, so I don't agree with that, fine. But then they go on to say that you can't buy kidney oat without a heksher. I'm like, where are you going to find in America kidney oat like tofu? They said you could eat tofu as a heksher for Pesach. Where are you going to find that? It doesn't exist. So like, if you want to help people, that's your goal, then do something practical. Don't say it's allowed. And then you can't buy anything. They say you can buy raw beans and rice, but you have to check it for chametz. No, that's not practical either. Who's going to do that? You know. And then when's the last time you saw breadcrumb in your beans? So what bothers me is that if you're trying to help people, this is not helping people. So if you want to help people, tell them you can buy products without a heksher for Pesach. That's very much helping people. And if you're going to say there's no kidney oat today and have that much chutzpah, right, and then not be practical, basically what's your goal? Your goal is to just be a rebel. Because you're not helping anybody, you're not doing anything practical. So that bothers me. Like, if you're going to help people practically and you're going to be a rebel, fine. But if you're not going to help, what's the purpose of the thing? The only purpose is that you're trying to say, kidney oat, I don't have to listen to that. Right? Well, so how does it help me? It doesn't matter. I don't have to listen to it. So that just bothers me. Most people read that, they say, Rabbi, you're crazy. No one thinks that are nice things. Bothers me. So I have a friend who's considered a rabbi, and I just said, how do you take this seriously? It drives me crazy. And whatever. So they were upset the way I reacted. So we had a meeting. I had a back and forth with her. So we met over coffee, and she explained what she said. I agree with her. I really overreacted. But I just don't understand. It's such a simple solution to this problem. The Shulchan Aruch says, you can't, the Ramah, which is the Ashkenazi Shulchan Aruch, says you can't eat rice and beans. Okay? Sorry, Charlie. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, you can't eat rice and beans. You're not going to die because you're not going to eat rice and beans. But that still means there's a lot of exceptions. Because, the reason it's exceptions is because kidney oat is a custom. A. Custom is not a strong basis in halakha. It's not a biblical law, it's not a rabbinical law, it's a custom. You have to keep customs. But there's magical, you know, halakhic tricks you can play to get out of a minhag much easier than you could get out of a biblical or rabbinical rule. So that's number one, it's a custom. Number two, the customs reason doesn't exist anymore. So it's a little, everyone sort of like rolls their eyes at it. That's why this tshuva says that you should get rid of it because the customs don't apply anymore. By the way, one of the reasons is because they used to store the beans with the chametz. So if they're telling you you have to check the beans for chametz, they're saying at the same breath, you don't have to keep it, but the reason is still there. Which doesn't make any sense. So, but the truth is the reason doesn't exist anymore. So you still have to keep it, but then you have questions. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has an amazing response on peanuts. Peanuts is a bean, right? It's one of the trivia questions I ask when I test people for the laws of brachas. I say, what is the only nut? Well, what's the rule about, I give a rule about nuts and a rule about berries. So basically there's one, every nut is ha'etz. People get so confused because of peanuts. Except for peanuts, but it's not a nut. Right? Peanuts is really a bean. Legume. And Every berry is ha'etz except for strawberries. It's ha'dama. So people, strawberries is one of the most favorite berries, so it confuses people. Strawberries is ha'dama, so many other things are ha'dama. So that's the rule I tell people to remember what the bracha and everything is. But the truth is, peanut's not a nut. Peanut is a bean. So since it's a bean, it should be not permissible because it's on the category of kidney oat. So Moshe Feinstein says it's permissible. Why? So he says because they didn't have peanuts back then when they made this injunction. Didn't exist in Europe. So how can the injunction go on peanuts? It didn't go on peanuts. So since it's so crazy anyway, we're not going to start adding things to it that didn't exist at the time. Now, you could argue against Rav Moshe Feinstein and say it's because it says all beans. So it could be even beans that they didn't know about. But he says that's not what it meant. So based on Rav Moshe Feinstein, now you can add two other things. Soy didn't exist in Europe. Corn didn't exist in Europe. That opens a whole world. Because if you could have corn and soy and peanuts, and you're not adding on stuff like quinoa they want to add on and green beans, you're saying, look, whatever existed back then, I accept. I lay down my arms. That's, so according to this, you could drink soy milk. According to this, you could have anything that's corn syrup in it, right? Now, there are levels to this. Person feels comfortable having a corn on the cob, I would say gesundheit, because it's not kidney oat. But if someone says, I don't feel comfortable doing that, fine. But there's another level. Second level is called mei kidney oat, or shemen kidney oat, which is oil. So if you have a product that has corn oil or corn syrup, that's much better than eating a corn on the cob. It's not the same thing. Two reasons. One, it's liquefied. Two, it's less than 50% of the product almost every single time. So to me, if there's soy or corn or peanuts in a product and it's less than 50%, there's nothing to talk about. Because even if it was rice and real beans and it's less than 50%, it's permissible. So I have to look at Snickers bar. But I know Reese's peanut butter cups, according to this, is kashrut Pesach. I looked at the ingredient. Kashrut Pesach. a lot of things, a lot of candies kosher l'Pesach, that are not labeled as kosher l'Pesach because there's nothing in it. And the only reason it's not kosher l'Pesach by the companies is because it has corn syrup or corn oil or soy lecithin or something like that.
What about chickpeas?
So chickpeas is a bean.
Okay.
And what can I tell you? Hummus is not something you should eat in Pesach.
Okay.
You're Ashkenazi. That's one of the that's one of the no's, in my opinion.
So this is why popcorns are popcorn.
Look at this. He says popcorn's okay, exactly. So according to that, popping popcorn will be kosher. And if a person feels uncomfortable because it's actual corn, like I said, there's other levels of leniency. So high fructose corn syrup is even better, because high fructose corn syrup, they change it completely from its original form. So it doesn't totally open the world up in terms of eating raw beans and rice or fresh rice. I think that's, if you're Ashkenazi, you should not do that. Because Shulchan Aruch says you should not do that. But if you have any product that's already pre-made for Pesach, and one of the ingredients that's less than 50% is of something mixed in, even if it's rice or beans, all the more so if it's corn, soy, or peanuts, then that is in the permissible category. So like dextrose, for instance, made out of corn, that's, no one will give a heksher on that. But that's kosher l'Pesach, right? Because in a corn, high fructose corn syrup, there's a ton of stuff that out there, like a lot, most vinegars are made out of fruit, actually. So that's for sure okay. But there's some vinegars made out of corn. And that would be a problem according to the kosher agencies, but really that's not a problem. Like this. So that's to me, this allows about 75 to 90% of the kidney things on the market. The only thing it doesn't is someone is used to eating chili or
hummus
or their chickpeas in their salad. I feel bad, but I can't be the one. You could ask the other rabbi.
Rice cakes.
So rice cakes the same problem.
So like peanut butter on your matzah.
So peanut butter in your matzah is fine.
Okay.
Bamba would be okay.
Bamba is okay because peanuts not peanut kidney. Mm-hmm. Moshe says before, mm-hmm. She's straight up. And the reason why this is easy to be lenient about is because, like I said, this is a custom that really shouldn't exist. So I can't get rid of it, but I don't have to make myself crazy about it, right? So if there's any kind of doubt, I could be lenient about it.
Do you think the OU will eventually
capitulate?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's such a strong... Was it against Rav Moshe that it ended up being peanuts got knocked out?
There were a few posts there against Rav Moshe. Debertina Rav held that it was kidney oat. The Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael held it was kidney oat. I'm pretty sure. Of Shlomo Zalman, I think, held it was kidney of Eliyashiv. But Bamba is still, I think they have kosher l'Pesach, but it's l'Ochel kidney. It says that, l'Ochel kidney, right? So that's it. So in Israel, there's tons of rabbis. But in America, Rav Moshe Feinstein usually is the last word for most things, especially in kashrus. So this is one of those things where he got overruled.
Is
it in Israel?
Okay. Here, not Israel. Here.
So according to what I'm saying, that's perfectly permissible.
That's
perfectly permissible. That's the style that completely changed. And it's corn. So that's what I think. You know, I've never heard someone come to me and say, "Here's the argument against it. It makes no sense." So until that happens, to me this makes total sense and makes my life easier. So spread the wealth. All right. So stop here. If anyone has questions, I'm happy to stay and answer any other questions. Yes, sir.
Do you know
any restaurant, kosher restaurants in Lakewood that might be open during Chol HaMoed?
Sure, there are. For sure. I don't know who they are. But.
I'll shoot you an email if you hear of any. Just because I may go down the shore that way.
I'll connect you to my sister-in-law. She knows, and she'll tell you. It's because she lives there. Instead of me guessing, but I'm positive. I mean, there's so many Jews there. We keep kosher for Pesach.
Yeah, plus we're so far into April. I'm sure the shore would make.
Right.
There'll be people.
Right.
Thank you. This was
pleasure.
This was very helpful.
Pleasure. That's the goal. So I'm happy.
Rabbi.
Yes,
what
sir.
What do I have to do to my office?
Just get rid of any edible hummus.
There's always going.
Are you gonna live there?
Are you
gonna work on Chol
HaMoed? We'll work on there in Chol HaMoed. Can't we throw?
No. You don't have to.
I'm not gonna eat hummus there. I'm not gonna eat there.
If it's their hummus, you don't have to worry about it. It's not your. It's not your hummus.
Even if it's our company, it doesn't matter. They work there.
They work there, but
good night.
Good night.
That's not my.
They
hummus.
Work there. It's not.
We gotta really get rid of our hummus. We have like alcohol and stuff like that. Pouring it out, not drinking it.
Can we sell it?
Yeah, sell it to the shul.
Pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Yes. Luckily, I recorded it, and I missed the beginning before that.